Welcome to this latest episode of the Forever Bristol City podcast. The final score at in West London. I don't know what they call the ground these days, whether it's the Lionel Road Stadium or the Brentford Community Stadium, but more importantly, the result. It finished Brentford 3, Bristol City 2. A not unexpected result, and the margin nowhere near the horror show that some people were expecting. Joining me to discuss the game and a few of the things going on outside of the 90 minutes are Ian, Dave Fevs. Mark will be joining us shortly as well. As we normally do, let's do a quick resume of the game before we delve into the detail and the lineups. I'll start with you, Ian. Ian, the defeat was expected and some people were expecting a horror show, and we came out of it with some dignity and an improved performance, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. I mean, if you check my Twitter feed, it was more or less the team that I said he should play, because we had to counter Brentford, and for a decent part of the game, we did that. So I was glad to see us line up that way, and I was very surprised to see us get the goal with an excellent free kick. But I mean, even if you took the first 10 minutes, we did more in the first 10 or 15 minutes than we did at 90 versus Derby. And, and by the way, what a great side they must be. They got Wallop 3-0 at Rotherham.
I know.
That's not good. You know, if you start, when people start saying, oh, well, you know, you've got to give some credit to the opposition. Well, not when we play like we did on Saturday. So no. Tonight we were a lot better. That wasn't difficult because Saturday was an incredibly low bar. But we were better. But what it shows it to me is that we are, to use my phrase, a bang average championship team, and there are a lot of them.
Yeah, there are this season, most definitely. Yeah.
And so I think
you can look at the top three, and I think, you know, as it stands at the moment, take a lot of shift in them, even though it's a bad division. Dave, the starting lineup, Ian said that's pretty much what he predicted. It was a 4-5-1? How did you see the lineup, and what was your brief take on the game before we delve into the detail?
Yeah, I guess it's anything between a 4-3-3 and a 4-5-1, depending on how we work with the ball and without the ball. And I thought tonight was encouraging. I don't think Brentford looked that good today. I thought our game plan was pretty decent, and I think we stopped them doing some of the good things that they like to do. And I actually think if we hadn't perhaps squandered some good positional play, certainly in the first half, I actually thought we could have come away with something tonight. And so I come away a little bit disappointed in many respects. I'm not saying, you know, we deserve to win or anything like that.
We might have deserved a point, mind me.
I think we upset them tonight with the way we played, and they didn't have it all their own way. Unfortunately, they did have the extra man on the pitch in the referee, who I thought was absolutely atrocious tonight. I thought he gave them every single little bit, and he didn't give us anything of the same.
No, right.
I think nothing. I'm not saying he cost us the result, but he had a big influence on the way that game went, I think.
Yeah, Ian, City had the perfect start. I mean, it was a good... I think it was Edwards who was fouled, and Hunt's free kick. He whipped that ball in, and it was a good finish by Zach Viner with just 2 minutes on the clock, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it was an excellent goal, and unusual for us to put a decent free kick in, and B, go into the lead. And I didn't realise, but that's the first time this season that we've gone in the lead, or under Dean Holden, we've gone in the lead and not won or drew the game.
That's right. He had an excellent record.
That's the first one we'd lost. So, I mean, it was good. You looked at the way the game was going and you thought, I can't see us hanging on to this unless we're extremely lucky. And unfortunately, that's the way it turned out.
That's the way it goes. Mark's joined us. Mark, we're getting into the detail of the game now rather than the overview. One of the encouraging things early on, certainly for the first 20 minutes, was that we saw flashes of Hanoa Masengo that we hadn't seen for, I'll say, 18 months. He looked really positive. And I've got to know, on 10 minutes, he created space for himself on the left and put in a shot that was weak. But an encouraging half hour from him. Maybe petered out a bit in the end. But your thoughts on Masengo and Awura Edwards, for that matter?
Yeah, I mean, we're Edwards first. I mean, you know, you want a player that's direct, you know, youthful exuberance, but he won that free kick by turning in into the defender. And you know, he actually won it. Not conned the referee a bit, but it was a great way to win a free kick. But Massengo was terrific. He must have made six or seven interceptions in the first half. And he wasn't just winning the ball, he was coming away with it. I think they could have been a bit better. He gave the ball to Edwards. He was feeding Edwards, but he wasn't getting a return pass. Mm. A lot of the times Edwards was a little bit wasteful in possession. But I think it was the way they squeezed up on Massengo in the second half and really worked Mariappa that cost us the game in the end. But in the first half, but I don't think maybe he shouldn't have been sacrificed, because like Ian said on Radio Bristol, I thought he was terrific. Gave us lots of energy. But it was really the weakness of
our left side.
I think of Edwards and Mariappa being unbalanced, especially for the third goal. He was all over the place.
Well, let's go. Let me come to Dave now, because Brentford were obviously going to come back after we got that early goal. And Godos had a shot from 20 yards. Bentley didn't know too much about that, did he? Him on the leg and went out for, I think, their first corner. And Pennant was close with that, wasn't he? Yeah, so good save by Bentz. It was an instinctive one, wasn't it?
Yeah, it got a bit of a deflection from the defender coming across, which kind of just moved it away from where he was probably going. So, yeah, it was a good save. We looked a little bit uncertain from corner kicks, didn't we? They had a couple of half chances off the end of it. So Pennant should have done better with one of them. Typical kind of header off he's kind of tried to glance it too quickly and ended up hitting.
It went off his shoulder in the end, didn't it? Yeah. And an equalising goal on 26 minutes. Alfie Mawson, you know, just reading some of the comments on OTIB, Alfie Mawson was he at fault because he let Fosu in? How did you see that equalising goal?
It was Mawson was at fault. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, just going, Dave, I'll come to you on it as well, Ian. But Mawson at fault?
Yeah, definitely. You know, unfortunately, it kind of almost got the double connection off of him. But I think most defenders will know when that ball's at that height, if you go in with your leg, you run the risk of not getting a good contact on it. And you've got to go in there and be big and strong and, you know, take the bloke with you and head it. And then it doesn't happen. And, you know, unfortunately, it led to the goal. So, you know, yeah, a mistake. He's been pretty decent since he's come back, in fairness. So, these things happen.
And Ian, I'll come to you, Ian, on Bentley. I mean, he had to touch the ball away in the way that he did. Otherwise, Ivan Toney would have scored. But it was a clinical finish by Canos, another player that we were linked with in days gone by, yes?
Well, I mean, Mawson tried to get in front of Fosu. Fosu Henry, isn't it? He tried to get in front of him and take the ball. He went for it with his right foot when his left would have been better. And the minute he did that, we were open down that side. And if he found anything above an average or a poor cross, they were probably going to score. Jack Hunt did his best because he smashed Toney into the back of the net, charged him in the back, which would have been a penalty had the guy kicked the ball over the bar. But it was Mawson for the first one. And I'll be honest, I know this is a bit like swearing in church, but I don't think Mawson and Callas have been great the last two games. I know they get put under quite a lot of pressure, but I thought they were both distinctly average tonight.
Yeah, well, I'll reflect that in the markings when we play our own version of Play Your Cards Right. I mean, Dave, Mark, start of the second half.
Can I just go back to that goal quickly?
What were you going to say?
I noticed it just on the edge of the shot when Canos puts it in, that Naj is just, well, he's about a yard away from him. Canos did the right thing for a forward. He followed the ball in. And he had the ball into an empty net. But Naj was about a yard away, trailing him, really. And it was a shame he went on his toes to try and get in front of that when it came off the bar.
Oh, you're right. But Mark, started the second half, Semenyo went on a good run. And then what a sublime little dummy that was by Naj. And it almost set up Viner for his second goal of the game, which was saved by Rea.
Yeah, he hit it from the D. He hit it cleanly. We do seem to hit the ball cleanly from long range. I mean, Backinson's shot seems to be good from long range. Yeah, and it curved into the on the ground. But Rea got down to his left well, and it went out for a corner.
Yeah. Yeah. Dave, the second goal, it was quite another lively start. I mean, it was a good game to watch, and I think you could say we definitely put in a performance which had been lacking for all of Derby and three quarters of the Huddersfield game. But the second goal, it was a finish of class, wasn't it? Again, it came from the right. Fosu getting the better of Mariapo, who was a bit weak in the challenge, put in I've put a wicked cross. And it was a good finish by Tony for his 20th goal of the season, wasn't it? How did you see our defensive inadequacies there, or just a class finish, or both?
I think got to put that down to top striker movement. I think he's got Callas on his inside, hasn't he? And he knows when that cross is coming, and he's made sure that when Callas gives a little look across to see where the ball is, that's when he darts near post. That's what gives him that, well, it wasn't even half a yard, was it? But yeah, just the top finish, and it always looks bad when you see it back, but I think you've got to give credit to the striker and credit to the cross. I think we perhaps could have done a little bit more defensively there. I think Masengo, if he'd have perhaps just driven back a bit harder, it might have just changed the angle that Fosu Henry was crossing from, but that's kind of being a bit critical, to be honest with you. Sometimes give a bit of credit to the goal scorer.
It was a good strike. And Ian, I mean, the game was, well, pretty much over 15 minutes later. Again, down that left-hand side with the unbalance and off form, maybe Mawson, and maybe not enough covering from midfield. But it was a good run by Fosu again. Crossed the ball for Godos, hit the bar, bounced back, off of Hunt. Godos lashed it home, 3-1. How did you see the goal, Ian?
It highlighted what we don't do across the midfield and in defence. We ball watch to a player. If you look at the second goal, when their lad took a pass from the back, the midfield player that got it was in 10 yards of space. So he got the ball, turned round and slid it out to Henry, who was in another 10 yards of space. He ran in, no one tackled him. A few people dangled a leg and, you know, but they didn't tackle him and they didn't close him down. And it was too easy for him to get that ball in. That cross should have been stopped.
Yeah.
And that also highlights the fact that when the other side's in possession, we defend too narrow. It's percentages defending. You think, well, let them cross the ball and we can defend it. Now, get out there and stop it. Break the move up. And that's three things that we've been doing continually. So ball watching, closing down, we don't get close enough, and defending too narrow. We leave way, way, way too much space on the flanks. And you know, the worst game I saw for it was Norwich. I mean, their two wing-backs must have thought they were on a fortnight's holiday in Benidorm.
Yeah,
it was so easy for them to... I mean, they didn't need to be any good to cross the ball because they had that much time. I could have stood out there and crossed the ball.
Yeah.
And that, you've got to look at things like that and say, right, how do we do this better? And the other side of it is obviously the not commanding midfield and defending too deep. The third goal you asked me about, very much the same.
Yeah.
Very much the same. We let the ball into the box too easy. And Canos did it quite a few times down the right-hand side as well. So, but... the minute you play a right-sided centre-back at left-back, you've got problems.
Against a side like that. Dave, Mark, the substitutes came 18 minutes to go. It was Naj, Masengo and Edwards going off, Wells, Palmer and Patterson coming on. Are you trying to save the game at 3-1 against them so you bring on the experience, or do you think, well, maybe... let's bring one of the youngsters on. What were your view on the substitutions and the timing of them, Mark?
Well, I think we needed to go for it. And I mean, it didn't really make a lot of difference because we couldn't seem to hold on to the ball in deep in Brentford's half. It just kept coming back, and Brentford had more chances, including one where I think Tony was able to lob Bentley from about 40 yards out, but it was wide to his left. But, you know, and it was only until, you know, the last noggins of the game, really, that we got that goal from Naki Wells through a mistake on their left-hand side, which Semenyo took advantage of.
Yeah. I mean, he looked, did you think, Dave, that Naki was offside for that goal, or was he sort of played in by a deflection?
I'm guessing the deflection played him onside.
Yeah.
It's interesting, just looking at the BBC website, and they've given Backinson an assist, and it's quite rare for press association to give assists for things like that. So on the basis they thought Backinson played it, then he was offside. But I don't care, to be honest, because I think we get enough given against us unfairly. So take them when you can. Unfortunately, it wasn't worth any points. But
yeah, well, we are where we are. And Dave, you thought the referee was... A bit of a homer, I think is the right term to use. And not along with that, with the commentary as well. It was everything Brentford did was great, and they were unlucky in if we did anything. But you thought it was a poor refereeing performance.
Yeah, I thought all the little 50-50 decisions that we didn't get for us, and there were a couple on were Edwards, I thought, where he got kind of blocked off. They got them when it happened to them. And yeah, I was really disappointed with the inconsistency of his decisions tonight. I swore quite a few times at the telly with some of his bad decision making. And I think, you know, they played the ref a bit better than we did. Something we can learn from, I think. But I actually thought Edwards, I quite liked the fact that he was a bit physical. He gave a nice kind of little forearm smash to Dalsgaard. I thought that was quite nice. And I think generally we showed a bit more physicality and a bit more energy out there. You know, it probably took its toll. And I think that typical thing, if you come out after half time, unless you kind of can get going straight away, it's almost like you need to make a sub after like 55 minutes just to kind of change the
revitalize
a little bit. And I think, you know, whilst it was 2-1 as well, I thought maybe it's a time just to change Edwards. And a bit like Mark said, I thought as bright as he was and as confident as he was, I thought he chose the wrong option too many times as well. And you know, on OTIP as well, there's been a lot of people saying, oh, we've got to give him a go, he's really, really bright, etc. And I think he is. And, you know, I've only caught glimpses of him at Grimsby. You know, great on the old skill spots, but there's a question mark, certainly at this stage of his development, in terms of when to just pass the ball, when to just realise when actually taking someone on might commit some, you know, commit one of your other players to have made a run, and then you both get caught out of position. And I thought that happened a little bit. And I thought, you know, 55 minutes, he's had a really encouraging debut. Let's take him off there. And I think we just left it, you know, 10 minutes too late to do that.
I mean, my friend Dave, the Brentford fan, we were chatting the SMS in during the game, and he said, certainly based on the first half, we were one of the better teams that they've come up against. And he said Watford and surprisingly Bournemouth, we'll come on to Bournemouth later, Watford and Bournemouth had impressed, and he watches all their games like we watch all of ours. He said they were without five of their regular players. I think there was a couple in midfield and De Silva. Despite that, they had more than we had. Ian, what is it? I mean, you said right at the beginning, Brentford, they seem more agile. They were always looking to push the ball forward. And look, we put in a performance of more energy than we've seen of late, but they were a step up. Why? How do they do it? Never mind their off-the-field transfer stuff, but how do they do that?
If you sit down and think about it, and I'll contradict myself in a minute, but it's recruitment. And they've got a pattern of play, and they recruit players that can play in that pattern of play. And they don't change. And they're not going to play any differently over the next 20 games or whatever's left, 19. And that's what they do. They recruit very well. They recruit very well from abroad and in this country. I mean, for example, finding out that Pontus Janssen had something like a 5 million buyout clause in his contract. They went up and got him. They still have to sell their best players. So for all the people that start crying into their tea and saying, no, you've got to realise we had to sell our best players, and Lee had to sell his best players. Well, they had to sell...
Well, go back a couple of years, Ian, because there was Mepham, the centre-half, and then there was Maupay, and then there was Benrahma and Ollie Watkins this summer, wasn't it? Just gone.
Yeah.
So it doesn't wash that... you know, oh, we have to sell our best players. You know, they do. Well, if you're, they do it more effectively, don't they?
Yeah, if you're unsuccessful in any division, and unsuccessful means not getting out of it, or not at least making the playoffs, you will not retain your best players. And in, even then, in some cases, you still won't, because a bigger club will think, hang on, he's all right. I'll go and sign him. So I think they do that. They also, and I mean, we've criticised, and I'm a biggest critic of promoting the manager's assistant, or promoting from within, if you want to call it that. And I appreciate their arguments for and against. But the guy that is their manager, is it Thomas Frank? He was in there running the they make motorcycle stuff, don't they? He was in there running the academy or the under 23s or that set up. And I saw program on their scout, I believe is in France, is something like a retired headmaster or a retired games teacher. And he set up their scouting network over there. And that's somewhere else we've been poor. So, yeah. It is all those things. And I think when we didn't sign a left back, that convinced me about there's been argument about was Dean Holden an austerity pick, and he was. And the fact we didn't sign a left back, and the fact we're hanging on with all these contracts, I know what's coming. So, I'm sorry, but
we've written it off. You said it wasn't. Yeah, we're holding. The season's over. I mean, we're into the realms of 2 points a game now, to pretty much give or take three or four points.
Not to finish sixth, we're not. We got 39 points, sixth place is 42.
All right. Well, it might be different if we beat Cardiff. I mean, Mark, let me come to you. Chris Martin out with an injury, we were told, sustained in training yesterday.
A hamstring. Tommy, when do those ever happen?
Oh, dear. Tommy Rowe, knee ligament, out for 2 months.
I wonder if it was the brightest idea for him to start against Derby on Saturday on that pitch. Because
exactly.
Playing on a heavy pitch, what an absolute cock-up. I mean, it's just you just can't believe the stupidity. I mean, we failed to sign a player in a transfer window. We had a list that's getting ever smaller, according to Dean Holden. Couldn't recruit anybody. We're down to our last left back in Tommy Rowe. Last left back wing back, because we got four other left-sided left full backs injured. And then that happens. So we're playing right back at left back, and you saw what happened tonight.
Were we not yesterday trying to tout before the window shut? We're trying to tout Masengo, who's one of the brighter players tonight, for Pedersen. Is he a left back at Birmingham? Yes. Was that a deal that somebody was trying to rustle through?
I think we did. I mean, according to Gregor, we asked and they said no. I think Pedersen was touted as being a bright prospect, wasn't he, last season, when big clubs would have gone into him. And I think his form's dropped a little bit this season. So it wasn't a bad shout. But like I said, it's always too little, too late. Why didn't we get a bit? We supposedly pride ourselves on doing our business early.
Yeah.
We didn't do our business early in the window. We signed what might be a luxury right-sided midfield player in Lansbury, who hasn't played since October, according to Ian. He really cheered me up on Radio Bristol before I went.
And he wasn't, but he must be injured, because otherwise he'd be given a run out for the under-23s.
I mean, it's crazy. We did this
He's not injured. He's not fit.
He's not fit.
He's not played any football. He hasn't played the first team game since October the 1st.
And he's not kept himself in condition then. That's the other thing. You've got to say,
he's probably been training with Villa, but you know, if you've played football, the only way you get match fit is matches.
He played for the under 23s 2 weeks ago, or two and a bit weeks.
Yeah, we supposedly beat other clubs. We beat other clubs off to sign him. So, you know, all these other big clubs, do you want to sign an unfit player who won't be able to play for 2 weeks? I'll have to think about that. Yeah,
give him to us. Well, and the other thing is, go on, finish, Mark.
The other thing is that I remembered about Ivan Toney You might, I don't know if you remember this, nerds like me. Five seasons ago, Ivan Toney couldn't get, he was a squad player in Lee
you're
Johnson's
saying that on Radio
team.
Bristol.
Yeah,
yeah, was, you don't need to say that, Mark. We had that. That was before we went.
Oh, well,
live.
I didn't know anybody. Yeah. I just thought you never listened to me. That's why.
Yeah, I mean, Liam's put on here that Dean has just said on Radio Bristol in his post match interview that Joe Williams is ready to return to the first team squad, so he could be on the bench on Saturday. Well, that would be
right. So I get the party poppers out. That's fantastic.
Well, we should do right. Let's do play your marks right. Okay, so. I'm starting off. You just say higher or lower. Don't wait for other people. I'll go on the consensus. All right. So in goal, Dan Bentley let in three. I'm going to give him a six because he didn't really have a lot to do, did he? Other than pick the ball out of the net those three times and one save. Yeah. Higher or lower than a six?
Yeah. Fine. Yeah.
What?
Six.
High. Oh, six. All right. Just say agree. Jack Hunt. I'm giving him a six because of the assist for the goal. Higher than a
agree.
Six or low? Agree? Agree. I'll do this as a pairing. Callas and Mawson. Ian's already alluded to this. I've given them a pair of fives there. Higher or lower than a five?
I gave them agree. Both sixes.
Six agree. Sixes. Higher. Yeah. I give them both six.
Well. I felt they both defended well apart from one mistake each, really.
All right. Fair enough. Bit harsh there. And therefore, I've done Mariappa as a five. It's not his fault that he's right-footed playing on the left. You're higher or lower than a five?
Agree.
Okay. Yeah. In the middle. I mean, if we just take it as they went left to right or right to left or whatever, I've said Semenyo a six. Higher or lower?
Agree.
Yeah. I gave Nash a six as well.
Yeah, agree.
Agree.
Viner a six. Oh, you got to give him a seven because he got the goal, really. Higher or lower than a seven? Won't be higher.
I gave him an eight. I thought he was excellent tonight.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, I really did.
Agree, seven.
Seven, all right.
Seven and a half.
I say six.
You say six. Okay, Hanoa, I've given him a seven because that was more of the Hanoa that we know is out there.
Yeah, agree.
Edwards, a lot of effort. Lack of end product, bit of naivety. Probably looked a little bit like Semenyo did in his early games. I've given him a six, though, because it wasn't a bad showing.
Agree with that.
Nice crossfield passes he knocked as well, didn't he?
He did. He sent a great one from left to right, didn't he, in the first half, if I recall correctly. And up front,
he came off the right.
He didn't play with any fear. That's what we like to see.
Yeah, no, he got stuck in, and as you say, Dave, he gave one of their blokes a nice little forearm smash. Dalsgaard, yeah.
He got it back. Oh, in the second half, I think he tried to shove Jensen over on the left hand side, and he shoved him right back over the sideline.
Yeah. Anyway, finally, Pham up front. Dave, you were critical of him in his performance at Derby. I didn't think he did that much today. He did a couple of little things in the second half, I noticed, when I was considering the marks. I've given Pham a five. Yeah, it was, you know, something.
I gave him a seven. I thought he led the line really well tonight. Yeah. Bearing in mind, we played more of a kind of 4-3-3, so he was up there on his own. I thought he had a decent game tonight. If he played like that every week, I'd be more than happy. If he plays like he did at Derby, then I'd be glad to see him go.
And if Chris Martin's out, I mean, we'll talk about Cardiff in a wee while. Okay, I mean, guys, it's six straight, and I'm ignoring the cup because, you know, if you want to be positive, you throw the cup games in there to make it not look quite so bad. But in the league, right, that's six straight defeats away from home. Dave, why? What's happening? Is it, I think you put up there, the players are tired. I mean, players in all 92 clubs are tired at the moment. But why is our away form gone to rat shit, for want of a better description?
I think generally we've not been playing well for a while, and we've probably got the results we deserve in the main, away from home. Mm-hmm. I think that's just the nature of it. I don't think we've been playing great.
Yeah. Ian, your thoughts? Away form, home form's picked up a little bit. Dave told me, well, not told me, it's there to read 7-2-4 at home, 5-1-8 away. Any reason why the away form's gone? Because we were good in away. We've been good away for the last 3 years, really, haven't we? In comparison to
that's the key point. We've been better away than at home. I think the reasons are the injuries. If you look at how we started this season, we had Vyman and Patterson in midfield, both injured. Backinson then got a bad migraine, then got COVID. So that disrupted the midfield. I don't think there's any confidence down there. I think Kalas is someone that will lead by example, but I don't think he's someone that's going to get older people by their shirt and tell them to come on. So I think there are a number of things, but at the moment we've got 16 players who are either injured or unavailable.
Yeah.
And that, when you look at, that's, if you take the enlarged squad, and that by that, I mean, the academy lads that we brought in, and there's eight of them never started a first a Skybet Championship game. If you've got that many problems, I think you'll be struggling with confidence. And I think that's a lot of it. But some of the performances, the start at Derby was almost identical to the start at Rotherham, and the performances were the same. And it isn't one game. We've been bad in an awful lot of games, and we've been poor in a lot of games that we've actually won. And the first one I'll give you was the first of the season when we beat Coventry. We could have easily been 3 or 4-1 down at half time.
Yeah, no. Well, Dan Bentley's kept us between a few. Dan Bentley's probably earned us over the season good half a dozen points, which is the difference between where we are and not looking over our shoulders with, as you say, 19 games to go. Okay, let's look to Cardiff in a minute. But what big news? Was it big news, Mark? This morning, read on the news feed, Tindall. Not the rugby playing Tindall. Is it Tindall at Bournemouth? Jason Tindall, relieved of his duties. His record over his last 12 games was 4-2-6. That's win, draw, lose. Our manager's record, another promotion from within over the last 13 games, ignoring Cup. I ignore Cup on Bournemouth as well, by the way. 5-0-8. Was that a surprise to you, Mark? Tindall going? Are they being, the Russians at Bournemouth being ruthless?
Yeah, Russians with no love, I suppose you could say. He's had the players. They've lost some silly games, including last night. But the goals have just dried up, and they brought in Jack Wilshere, and they dropped him, didn't they, for last night's game? Just showed you how good he is. But with the players that he had in the squad, the owners wanted them to bounce straight back. And when it looks like they're slipping down, they were ruthless in getting rid of him. I think it was a strange appointment for them.
In the first place,
They had the ability. They're a good football inside. They still retained some decent players. Brought in that Dutch kid who won the game against us. And I thought they got some big, physical, strong players. They should be in the top six. I think they just slipped up, but they weren't prepared to be patient. And that's the thing with clubs like that. You've got to look at Watford, who changed their manager like people change their pants, don't they? They're not bothered.
I don't know how often you change your underpants, Mark, but we don't need to go into this sort of thing on a family show. No swearing today. Dave, do you think, did the Bournemouth sacking, it was a sacking, did the Bournemouth sacking surprise you? And do you think they'll be looking for a decent human? Could Eddie Howe return after nearly a year out? What do you think?
It doesn't surprise me at all. I think, four defeats on the trot in the league, and I guess the distance to top two, which is probably what they were looking, and not, avoid the lottery of the playoffs, that gap's increasing. I guess in some respects the gap to seventh and the teams below, including ourselves, is, I wouldn't say it's decreased, but it's all bunching up, and it only takes another defeat and a win, and suddenly they're out of the top six. But it does seem a bit bizarre because they appointed Jonathan Woodgate as coach. It's like, what's all that about? It doesn't sound, doesn't sound great there, does it?
No, Ian, nice humans and all of that. They brought in Woodgate on Monday. If I was Tindall Monday, I'd be a little bit worried. Although if I was a Bournemouth fan, I wouldn't really want Jonathan Woodgate in charge. Your views on Tindall going, a surprise, an internal appointment that had failed, and do you think Lampard's name's being touted around for that job? But your thoughts on the sacking and who might get it?
Frank Lampard's not interested, and his wife's having another baby, and he'll probably I think, want to spend some quality time at home, and I think he'd want to go back to the Premier League, and I think he might get a job there. One name I saw thrown into the ring only because he lives local is Harry Redknapp. And was he manager of Bournemouth before? I think he might have been many moons ago. I don't think Eddie Howe wants to go back there. I think that's water under the bridge. So honestly, I haven't given it a lot of thought because I don't really care. I think
as long as I keep losing, it's great.
Yeah, exactly right. Well, I mean, I think we should, whether we will or not. I think we've got the opposite here. We've got a guy who doesn't pull the trigger, and that can be as big a problem. I mean, I will remind you that Watford had four managers the season they got promoted, and they did stay up in the Premier League for what was it, three or four seasons?
Yeah.
So I mean, they've all done far better than us. Let's not kid ourselves. And I think that could be that we've got a guy who. You know, I think Lee Johnson got two seasons more than he should have done. And I don't think this guy should have ever got the job. And I don't think Lee Johnson should have got the job ever. But that's my opinion.
Yeah, no, it's, I mean, look, next up, it's Cardiff. And what's his name? Mick McCarthy was there watching the game behind a mask. Was that an essential journey? Because he could have sat home and watched it on Sky. But yeah. They've only got 3 points from their last six games, so they're not exactly flying at the moment. Dave, this is a game that we really have to win on Saturday, don't we? Yeah, I would say have to. We just need to, because we said that four-game sequence, 7 points. If we win on Saturday, it'll be six, yeah? They showed our next six games coming up after Cardiff. There's some toughies in there. Must-win game. From the point of view of just keeping in touch, yes, Dave?
Yeah, I think so. I think it'd be a big boost after a reasonable improved performance tonight. If we could go and win at home on Saturday, then I think all of a sudden you've probably lost a couple of clubs off the closing pack, and you've put yourself in a slightly better position. It's probably a false dawn anyway, but you know. I'm not sure we've got the consistency to do that. I'm sure one of the sides around us will have a run, and I'm not sure we will. But hey ho, you know, we might do. And you know, the longer we're in touch, the better. I suppose with season ticket sales be coming out, you know, in a month or so, you know, I'm not quite sure what happened there.
Do you really think they're going to be?
I don't know. It'd be difficult to sell it, but I guess it's. Try and keep the fans relatively on side if we're still in touch. I think if we were to lose the next few and end up sort of in 12th, 13th, 14th position, then I think it's going to be a very long end to the season. So I think we just need to kind of keep plugging away, and whilst sixth place
we're chasing sixth because the gap between sixth and fifth is what is it, 5 points? Yeah, because that's the way to look at it. And we're, you know, if you want to be positive, we're there with a clutch of clubs trying to keep hold of that sixth slot. And Bournemouth
It's our goal difference, isn't it? It's our goal difference.
Well, the goal difference is worth a point. Yeah, no, there's no one. How many times have we said that over the years? Ian, would you agree with Dave that, you know, it's a must-win game from the point of view of just keeping in touch, not critical to the end of season, but maintaining a playoff hope?
Yeah, I think it is, and I think it's a must-win game for morale. We've got a cup game coming up. Just a little bit of an update for you. Haki Adelican is out for the rest of the season.
You're joking.
It's his back injury, was it?
He's got a mystery back injury, which, I mean, having had back injuries, it can be something in your back, and it could be something to do with your hamstring, sorry to say it, or your hip.
Martin is alignment somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why. I mean, I always used to go to a chiropractor who would like click you back into shape and bend it. But if you've done something to your hamstring, that ain't going to work. Tommy Rowe's out for a couple of months, I would guess. I mean, he's a tough character, Rowe. I would probably say. I mean, the season has got. Where are we now? You've got February, March, and April. So that's 12 weeks, or should we say 11, and then you've got 2 weeks in May. So you're probably not going to see him. I think one hope...
Easter, after
crossed,
Easter.
One hope that crossed my mind was that Callum O'Dowd said he'd be fully fit in 2 weeks when he was at the... the Derby game. So yeah, in 2 weeks' time, he could play emergency left back.
Or left wing. At least he's balanced on that side, isn't he?
Play him as a left wing back, and I think go back to 3-5-2, and that probably gets the best out of what we got. And then you can use Semenyo and Edwards and players like that as impact players, or you know, you can put Semenyo up front with Zizou and use him as a bit of a battering ram at times. You know, you've got to make the best out of what you've got. But there needs to be somebody independent go in and have a look at the training, the medical side, because this I don't know of another side in this division that have got the injury problems that we've got. I think it's just way, way, way too much in one season. Yeah. I mean, 16 players out. Well, yeah, 16 players out.
Was Martin just a precautionary one, Ian? I didn't catch the full interview before the game.
No, he said he did his hamstring. They were practicing set pieces and he did his hamstring. They don't know how bad it is. He's off for a scan. So we now know he's got to go up to, I think it's Solihull, they go for the scans. So he's
up to the Spire, yeah.
Probably
yeah,
up there, tomorrow.
That's where I had my prostate removed up there 7 years ago, nearly.
Thank you for sharing that with us, David.
Yeah, no. Well, I just say anybody
and,
who's
and
Asian.
With all our listeners, wherever you may be.
Exactly. No, yeah. But it's a good point. It's a good point. Anybody who's over 50, and this is relevant, have a PSA test, because I had no symptoms or anything like that. And 7 years ago, I had a PSA test and it was in double figures and, you know, bang, you know, you suddenly get that specter coming up. And we don't, as blokes, we don't test things like that. But I can say it's a very good hospital up there. But I didn't see any footballers from Bristol City when I was there. Mark, do you think he's going to go for... You know, the fact that he was able to bring on the likes of Wells, Palmer and Patterson, do you think we're going to see an experience line up against the boys from the other side of the bridge on Saturday?
Yeah, I mean, he can only pick what he's got available, but it'd be nice to see Patterson back in and maybe even Joe Williams on the bench.
Well, he said that.
Yeah. Joe, well, if he can get him on the bench Saturday, then you could see him starting against Sheffield United on next Wednesday. But yeah, I think it's going to be an experienced lineup. I don't like 4-4-2. I don't know what we play. We play 3-5-2 or I really 4-4-4. 3-3 against Cardiff. If we play on the front foot like we did at the start, I think we got a chance. You know, we got a chance of beating them. Get crosses into the box. We did that for the first time. We weren't doing that on Saturday. And you know, go back to those last six away games. We only scored one goal in the five previous away games before tonight. And one of those, that was an own goal against Luton. And we definitely deserved to lose to Rotherham and Norwich and tonight, you know, comfortable wins for all three sides. But we, you know, we could have beaten, we could have got something out of the game against Preston and Luton. I think there was one other that escapes me, but we just didn't create enough chances.
The thing was tonight, we got what had been lacking for the last one and a half games, and we got a semblance of a performance. If we'd have kept up our first half hour energy, a bit like Huddersfield again, wasn't it? You know, and if we'd have ended up losing the game 3-1, 3-2 even, and just had a bit more energy towards the end, I think we're not feeling too downhearted today. Somebody's just put on there that Twitter's going a bit mad this evening, but I haven't looked at it. I don't think you have either, Dave. But look, we've done that. We've done Cardiff. Dave, I want to the transfer window has been and gone. You posted something that got a lot of traction on OTIB about our esteemed chief exec and what have you. Do you think, if you're Mr. Lansdowne, do you think maybe that our chief executive might be more under more pressure, right, for his princely salary that you put it in the lifted it off the account. So I won't mention it, but yeah, it's £500,000 a year, which we think was just him. Do you think our chief executive is under more pressure? It is just him, right? I thought, yeah. So that's fact. Do you think he is under more pressure? Sorry, go on. We paid
600,000 last year for our directors' remuneration, yeah. And on our accounts it says the highest paid director was paid 500,000+ and about 13,000 of pension contributions.
Yeah, so that's him.
We've only got four directors. We've got Gavin Marshall, who's the chief finance officer. Director. We've got Doug Harmon, who I'm guessing is more of a non-executive director, and we've got John Boy Lansdowne. So if it isn't Mark Ashton, Mark Ashton's only on 100,000 most, and you can't tell.
Did you just say only, Dave?
So he's on 530,000 he got last year.
There was a big pension contribution in there as well.
And able to give his window cleaning round up, so give him credit.
Yeah, but look, I think
it's a lot of money for a 16 million.
Well, you said for a 16 million turnover business. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Wouldn't you be saying, hang on, what's your turnover business?
16 million football. Director of the football side. The football side turned over 16 million last year.
And spent 24 million on players.
Yeah, and
if you're Steve Lansdowne.
We brought in 24 million. It's not Steve Lansdowne. I was just going to say,
you're Steve Lansdowne. I mean, if he hadn't got on the phone already, the fans are going to think, get on the phone to Mark Ashton and say, look, Mark, what are Brentford doing that you're not? Why are they getting
Let me come back to that question to Dave, right? So do you think, or does the panel think, that Mark Ashton is under more pressure than Dean Holden come the witching hour, which will be when the final ball of this season's kicked and a new financial landscape exists for football going forward? Dave?
I think they're both under an equal amount of pressure, because if the Holden appointment goes wrong, some might argue it already has, but you know, I'm not quite of that opinion. If that goes wrong, there's no way that John Lansdowne's going to take the flak for it, is he? So the only other person involved in that decision, other than Steve Lansdowne, is Mark Ashton. And so therefore, I think he is under pressure. I think you've also got pressure financially from Arajishu. You know, 5.3 million signing. Mm. I know his asset value is less than that at the moment because of depreciation, amortisation. But effectively, that's when Mark Ashton signed that player, because Mark Ashton told us last week that he was a key part of, you know, FAM coming to this club. Well,
yeah,
he pretty much said, we've bought FAM to either fire us to the Premier League, or FAM's come here and sees it as a stepping stone, and you know, and effectively saying we'll get a big fee for him. So actually, you could say the expectation was to get 10 million for FAM when we moved him on. So actually, to get zero from him, you could argue, is worse than getting nothing from a 5.3 million.
Yeah.
You know, Ian will probably bleat on as well and say, and we got Nathan Baker for I didn't mean it like that, Ian, but I think you're right on this. But we got 3.5 million going out the door with Nathan Baker. So that's part of 9 million. Jack Hunt, another 1.5, 1.6. Jamie Patterson, probably half a million. You know, we've got a lot of.
And I know Naki Wells has got 2 years to go on his contract, but what are we going to get for Naki Wells in 2 years' time?
It's like Ian said plenty of times. I mean, Diju's got the club, but the short and curt is they should have put him on the transfer list in the summer if he didn't sign the contract. Because he holds all the cards. The club didn't have a leg to stand on in the transfer window because he didn't want to move. They couldn't do anything about it. So now he can just wait. If he hadn't already got an offer that we don't know about, he can let his contract run out. And that's, you know, he's just an employee of the club, so he can do what he likes. You know, he's not trying on the pitch, but the club wasted that opportunity to try and replace him in the summer if they didn't get him to sign a contract, and they blew it. And it's just the tip of the iceberg, isn't it?
Yeah. Ian, I mean, your thoughts. Who's under more pressure, or is it equal as Dave suggests, Holden or Ashton come June the 1st?
I would say marginally Holden, depending on how it goes over the next 19 games. To get 76 points, which I've said for a while, I think that would get you in the playoffs in sixth place.
It's 2 points a game, bar 1 point now, isn't it? Yeah, 19 to go. Yeah,
yeah. He needs 11 wins and 4 draws. So out of 19 games, that means he can lose 5? So, you know, is it possible? Yeah. Is it likely? I don't think so. At the end of the season, we've got 11 players out of contract. Now, some I'm not worried about even slightly. I mean, the players include Rennie Gilmartin, Marley Watkins, who we should have never signed, Haki Adelikun, who we should have never signed. So that's 3 for a start. But some of the others on there, we should have made our mind up, as I kept saying about Zizou. You make your mind up with a year to go and you say, right, there's your contract. It's the best we can offer. Are you signing it? No. Right, bring your agent in, sit down. You're going on the list. We're sending your name round. And that's how it's got to work. You've got to make up your mind about these players. And you can't leave it until lastminute.com. And you've got 14, 15 million quid's worth at our cost. That's what we paid going out the door. Unless we are going to go totally down the youth route next season, in which case my view is we get relegated. Unless you're going to go down that route, then it makes sense. But it makes sense in terms of austerity if you're looking to have your wage bill. And perhaps Steve's got to the point where he said enough's enough. Clear this lot out, and we'll bring in a lot of lads from League One who will play for a couple of £1,000 a week.
That's what I'm saying.
The thing is, it's interesting.
His wage bill, didn't he? And we got relegated.
Yeah. It's interesting because if you... I mean, maybe we go back to the old way of football management because they got enough, you know, as you say, that guy Marshall's the finance guy. So he's probably got his head screwed on. And if you're looking to take cost out of the business and your chief exec is costing you $500,000 a year, best part of 600 probably with his pension and other expenses, and not a great track record in the transfer market of late, then... You know, do you say, all right, look, let's dispense with chief executive and push the boat out on a manager, who has got the experience, you know, and will appease the fans? Because if you listen to what most of the fans say, they want it's having someone with experience. Now, whoever you have with experience is going to have a track record of failure somewhere. But I don't know. That's just my view. Dave, just to wrap up, I mean, the COVID thing, you know, we hear things are getting better. You suggested that season tickets are going to be going. I'll say a bad shout, but oh God, they couldn't be picking a worse. We've got to end the season on a high, wanting people to go back and watch Bristol City, haven't we? Yeah,
You're in sales, David. What's the unique selling point from Mark Ashton's point of view? We don't know what the situation with COVID. The club's not doing very well in the league. What's his unique selling point? How's he going to sell it?
I'll tell you how they're going to sell it because they're stupid. They phoned me up the other day, actually, or sent me an email the other day for the Millwall match, and they said, "Oh, would you like to advertise on the shirt sleeves for the Millwall game? Because it's going to be on television and so many people will be watching it." So that's the little one on the sleeves. Do you know how much they wanted for that?
Go on.
One game. Short sleeve, probably. Yeah. £8,500. Right? £8,500 they wanted for that. They're living in cloud cuckoo land in this day and age. I did advertise against Manchester United when it was on TV. I think it cost me a couple of grand for that particular game. And then I did it for the balance of the season. And in the 19th and the 64th minute of each bloody game, it was like watching 200 quid go up in smoke. And the Man United game, one of my clients phoned me up and said, "I bet we paid for that, didn't we?" So, but You know, and the other thing I offered them, as I said, look, can you, where the two technical areas are, why don't you put something on the grass? And I'll put my logo on the grass, yeah, just there. Because when the substitution's being made, yeah, you know, like they run off and you can see the logo. I mean, I sponsored Buster Footman back in 1998 and my phone was zinging one night when it was the Bolton game, I think, when John Ward resigned the next week. But Buster was out there on the field, bending over, facing the camera. Oh, I've just seen your logo. Anyway, they had to go to the FA to get approval to have this thing put between the two dugouts, right? And they invited me down to the ground. This is about 2 years ago now, and I stood up in the director's box, and I said, "So how much is it then?" And he said, 15. And I thought, 1,500, 15 grand. I mean, you know, what are they on? But you said that they got a unique selling point. Right here, right now, they haven't. It's That's a busted flush as a product. Would you agree with that, Ian? You know, are you, I mean, you travel a long distance to come up here, right? It's an effort for you. Are you going to be, what's going to make you buy, I mean, I'll buy a season ticket. Well, I've got 1 year left. They're sat on 500 quid of my money that I haven't asked for them back yet. But, I mean, what are you going to do next season? What would make you buy a season ticket, or have you just given it up now?
I think if we had a new manager, I think my view would be, if I was Stephen Lansdowne, I'd be looking at it. I'd clear out from Mark Ashton downwards.
Yeah.
So I'd take Mark Ashton out first. Then I'd take out Holden, the two coaches. I'd take out the fitness and conditioning guy. And the medical team. And I'd clear it out and start again. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but you'd have to bring in somebody in. But who... who do you bring in?
Then you're going to have to push the boat out and get somebody like, or go and get Eddie Howe. Chris Wilder might have the sack by then, depending on what. I don't think Sheffield United will sack him. I think they will get relegated, and they'll keep with him on the basis that, well, he got us up once, he can do it again. And they've got a good side. And I think, unlike a lot of the clubs, when they come down, they will hang on to the vast majority of their players. So that would be my take. I don't think Steve will do it. I don't think he'll go for an Allardyce or an Eddie Howe.
You don't think you could renew the Eddie Howe Jason Tindall partnership, couldn't you? Yeah, which
well, I don't think the number two makes a world of difference. I just think I'd like to have seen someone with some experience. When you look at their CV for a job, and you say, "Well, where's this person been?" I mean, it's only probably the UK government that has people with worse CVs. You know, what have you done? Well, I was responsible for a huge data breach in which customers lost all their management details. Well, you sound absolutely ideal for Test and Trace. Would you like a job? And can you just confirm who you're married to? Oh, a Tory MP. Yeah. Well,
Have one major sporting event at the Cheltenham Festival when everybody's there, because we're members of the Jockey Club, and we got to do that jolly hockey sticks.
Yeah, and Atletico Madrid versus Liverpool. We'll let that go. Have they got a big outbreak in Spain? Oh yeah, how many are coming? 3,500 to Liverpool. Yeah. Oh right, that's okay then.
You couldn't make it up.
But no, what I'm saying is we need that clear out. I've had enough of.
Yeah. Are you of that view as well, Dave?
I genuinely had enough, and I'm not going to go. I won't get a season ticket unless something like that happens. Because I just, it's just unentertaining. It's dull to watch. Unwatchable is a word that I don't think I'd even heard that before this year, but I've started to use it quite a bit. Tonight was better. We played better tonight, but I don't know whether that's because I'm looking at the Derby game, Millwall at home, Birmingham at home.
Two thirds of the Huddersfield game,
I'm looking at a very, very low bar. And saying, well, it was better than that. So I don't know. I'll have to sit down and have a real think about it.
Dave, Your thought, Dave? I mean, I think for me, it's a case of, do I buy a season ticket or do I go corporate? And I know they're going to make, this was the final year of the 5-year corporate deal that I had, which I have two of them. Yeah. They're going to want me to roll that over next season, but I'm minded that, you know, I will be there come what may, because that's what you do. Yeah. When you've been going 53 years. But I would be more likely to say, no, you sat on 500 quid of my money from last season. I'm going to buy two season tickets, and, you know, the 5-year deal on the corporate, based on the signed terms, it expired this year. Yeah, because, you know, sure as eggs are eggs, if we had, in the unlikely event, if we had gone up, this year would have been written off and they wouldn't have rolled it over next year. So it's all about taking our money at the moment. But Dave, would you, I mean, you're going to go down because you're local. Yeah, Ian's the only one of our little group that has a decent long journey to do. But, you know, are you, what's going to make you feel good come the summer on the basis that we're likely to end up at best, I think, where we are now, possibly lower? What's going to make you feel enthused?
I think, you know, going back to what Ian's just said about you know, he clear the decks, or whatever his expression was just now. And I think just want to reflect on that in terms of say, that's a pretty sad indictment, and I don't disagree with him, mind, of Mark Ashton's reign since he came in officially in the end of January 2016.
Yeah.
You know, to be in a position where we've not been able to grow, and actually we're at a point where actually we're talking about, you know, potentially the whole kind of out of contract players leaving. You know,
yeah.
I did some maths on this. I think it frees us up about 5 million wages if we don't recontract any of those players. And about another 5 million in amortization. So it's about that'd be 10 million off the books.
And that's what we need to do because of losses anyway, isn't it?
It is. And then you think, okay, and then we might lose, say, Bentley in the summer, because he might be our sellable asset. And then you think we're gonna be left with not very much money unless Lansdowne is happy to take a punt next year. That with the FFP losses of this year and the previous years, we've got 1 year to give it a go. That's the only hope that we've got of, is that Lansdowne thinks that actually I just need to give it one big year. And if not, then it's, you know, but then if he wants to do that, he's got lots of things he needs to do. And he needs to probably, you know, I like Dean Holden. I think he's had a bit of a rough time with injuries or whatever, but I don't think, you know, honestly sat here having watched it in the last 2-3 months, that he's the man to take us up. I don't think he's going to gain enough experience or it's the right quality.
Exactly. And he's going to be, sorry, go on.
Yeah. So I think we need a new manager, and that manager is going to have to come in, and you probably want someone like Paul Cook. You want someone like that, who's got a track record of finding gems and bringing them and giving them game time and making them better and making your team better, like he did at Wigan. Because, you know, Wigan were one place below us without their points deduction relegating them last season, and that was after a pretty poor start, and they're, you know, on a fraction of the budget of what we are as well. So you have to go and get someone like that. Now, you know, people said, you know, Paul Cook wouldn't touch us with a barge pole. Paul Cook, I think, would crawl over broken glass to work at a team with a budget like ours. Certainly the budget we've had.
I think you're right, Dave.
But Will, I think the big sticking point is, I still don't ever believe this view that Mark Ashton signs the players. I think the manager has a say in the players. I think talent ID is crap. And that's the big problem. And we don't I put it on a text there. We can't critically analyse it and look back and say, so what did we do right with Adam Webster? Because we haven't followed that up since, have we? So to me, that sounds a bit like a bit of a fluke.
And it was interesting.
And that might sound a bit...
There was a thing in Twitter today. Sorry, I forwarded it to you. There was a thing in Twitter today.
I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, a lad put a post up, but he said, like, probably the biggest success we've had is Adam Webster. And he quoted, I can remember it being said, that Lee Johnson said, "That's the player that I want if you're going to sell Aidan Flint."
Flint.
Yeah, so that was definitely, Adam Webster was somebody that Lee Johnson wanted. And he so said, that's my player.
Yeah, so was Josh Brownhill. And for the umpteenth time, the manager, Dean Holden or Lee Johnson or the head coach, whatever they're called, has final say on all incoming players.
Yeah.
Right? Mark Ashley said
that. That's true. I don't think they're
he said it to me. He said it to me personally. Lee Johnson confirmed it to me personally in face-to-face conversations. And he actually said it on the 20-man program, and he said it before. And I think he's actually fed up with saying it. And he also said, when I was at a dinner and he was speaking, that people need to be clear, he has absolutely nothing to do with talent identification.
Apart from running a department.
Yeah, I mean, but in the sense of he doesn't go and watch the player, or he doesn't look at the videos, or, you know, there's a team of people that do that. And I think, by the way, I think a few of them need to be looking over their shoulder as well.
Yeah.
Who's that, Ian? Sorry?
The talent identification people, scouts.
All of it.
I think the whole lot needs a really good reset. I mean, the budget's going to get reset. There's no doubt about that.
Did anyone watch COVID, and with the
season ticket reduction, which there definitely will be, it will be probably 30%. I'm guessing at least.
Well, that's a huge cash injection, isn't it? Unless March, April, they're not going to have.
Well, but if you get relegated from the Championship to League One, you lose about 6.5-7 million on TV money and solidarity payments.
Yeah.
So you need to be. You can't be too silly about it. And I think that's where the real issue is. But at the moment, I look at it, and he was asked tonight, Holden, if he's got any alternatives at left back, and he said, "No, we haven't." And then very worryingly said, "George Nurse is a while away, and so Stephen Sessegnon."
Jesus Christ!
So Sessegnon
so
must
he's
be,
not on. He's got to be on. But no mention of Liam Walsh either. No.
Did either of you, or and Mark for that matter? Sorry, I forgot your name, Mark. Mm-hmm. Did any of you see that Keith Burt YouTube video that I stuck up last week, which was done in the summer,
I didn't. Sorry,
the summer between promotion. And he talked specifically about what the plan was. And he talked very much about having a slim squad. It was the year of the promotion. It was talking about having a...
So summer 2014 then, was it?
A trim squad where they would focus on quality. And they had total belief that Joe Bryan, Wes Burns and Bobby Reid would be the three players who would... save them having to like go out and it was really, you know, there was no core.
But send us a link to that.
It was quite dour in effect, but it was clear, it was coherent. You knew exactly what they were trying
to do. It wasn't full of jargon. Wasn't full of jargon.
Exactly.
Guys,
it was like that. That's when it went downhill.
Yeah. Guys, it's well past bedtime. Depends what time you're listening to this. You seem to be posting all sorts of hours on the OTIB, Dave. You know, but well done you. I'll probably be sat on there for another half an hour having a look. But look, it's been a great pod. I think you're taking this Saturday off, Dave, aren't you? Yes, if I recall correctly, it's Saturday off. So it'll be me, Ian, and Mark, and another. I think Liam's asked if he can. Come on, so Liam, if you're still listening,
get a different voice on as well. I think
come on there, yeah, that'll be good. But thanks
happy
a lot
for
your
policy, Dave.
No, I stick with those that I can trust. guys, great pod, better performance, still a defeat, and we go again on Saturday against Mad.
You didn't just say that, did you, David?
I did just say we go again.
Dear God.
Have a good evening. What's left of it, guys? All right.
God bless you, sir.
Good night.
Yeah. Good night. All the best, chaps.
Bye. Bye.